Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be focusing on the 36th chapter, Perek Lamed Vov of Sefer Yeshayahu. Interestingly enough, we now take a detour back to narrative. That means to say that up till now, most of Yeshayahu has not been describing a story of what's been happening. It's rather the human voice, the voice of the prophet, responding to what we've seen happening in Sefer Melachim. But now we actually go back to narrative. So for the next few prakim, we're going to go back to a story, and it's almost exactly the same story that we've seen in Menachem Beis, which appears in Menachem Beis Perek Yod Tes and onwards. So let's focus on this. The topic of this perek is Sancheriv's siege on Yerushalayim in terms of Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Chizkiyahu is the last king, or essentially the last king that Yeshayahu is prophesizing to. He is a student of Yeshayahu, while Achaz was a bad king. His son Chizkiyahu was under the tutelage of Yeshayahu, and when he became king, he changed things around. As we know, he disrespected his father's burial, buried his father, taking him to his grave on a mitzvah shel chavonim, on a bed of ropes. We also know that he did not bury him in the Kivrei Malchei Yisrael, in the same place that the kings ought to be buried. He destroyed the copper snake, the Nachash Nechoshes, which was being used as a divining agent, was being served as Avodah Zarah. He hid the book of Refuos, which people were relying on. He did a lot of amazing things. He removed the Bama, which is this altar in the Beis HaMikdash, which Achaz, his father, established. And he really brought about a spiritual reformation. We're told that in the 14th year of his rule, Sancheriv, who is now the king, the empire of Assyria, sent his army against the villages of Yehuda and captured them. And then he sent Rav Shakeh, from Lachish, which is one of the cities, to Yerushalayim to besiege it with an extremely large army. He took the Ta'alas, which is the Brecha Elyona, the upper spring. And in response to this siege, Chizkiyahu sends out his delegation, which is constituted of Eliakim ben Chilkiyahu, who's in charge of the house, Shevna HaSofer, and Yoach ben Asaf, who is the Mazkir, the secretary, who are sent out to speak to Rav Shakeh. So Rav Shakeh actually turns to them and says, tell Chizkiyahu, it doesn't even give him the appellation of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, he says, tell Chizkiyahu, the great king of Assyria says, what, who are you trusting in? You're trusting in Egypt? Really, you think that's going to help you? He says, HaKoneh HaRatzutz HaZeh, this limp weed, Egypt that you lean on is going to cut a hole in your hand. That's really what's going to that's going to be really helpful to you. Meaning to say, I've already destroyed Egypt, which we saw before Yeshayahu was talking about. And then he says, he goes on further and he says, well, maybe you rely on your God, right? That's right. So your God, who Chizkiyahu removed all the bombers of all the Assyrian deities from the base of the Mikdash. He said, well, let me ask you a question. Is if I were to give you 1,000 horses, do you even have a sufficient number of people, of people who are capable of riding them? How big is your army even? If your goddess cares about you so much, how did he not stop me destroying all other dominions around and their kid to gods didn't stop them? How did he not stop me destroying the northern kingdom? That is what Rav Shakeh says, a very large taunt to the delegation. So the response is they say, so Eliakim, Yoach, and Shevna say, look, Mr. Rav Shakeh, why don't you're speaking very loudly in Hebrew, why don't you speak to us in Armenian, because there's people on the wall, you know, we don't want them to be hearing what you're saying. So Rav Shakeh turns to them and he says, I have been sent, and I'm going to say what I want. I want them to, and he says in the most disgusting way, I want them to eat their feces and drink their urine, meaning to say, I want them to be in terror for what I'm about to say. And then he raises his voice and speaks loudly in Hebrew, and he says, Shimu es divrei ha-melech ha-gadol melech ha-shur. Listen to what the king of Assyria has to say. Ko ha-melech ha-omar ha-melech, al yasi lochem Chizkiyahu. People of Jerusalem, don't listen to what Chizkiyahu is saying to you. Ki lo yochal la-tzil eschem. He cannot save you. Va'al yavtach. Don't listen to what he's saying, that God will save you. Rather, no, that's not going to help you. I can give you land, I can give you vineyards, I can give you good places, but all you need to do is join with me. Don't listen to him. So he's trying to create psychological fear in the ranks internally, that there should be more questions as to whether they should trust Chizkiyahu. And we know from Yeshayahu's words earlier on in Sefer Yeshayahu that in fact this was actually successful, because we know that Shevna is actually turned coat and was sent an arrow out to the hosts outside to try to turn around, and in fact to try to gather a force against Chizkiyahu from within the city, and in fact he was not successful. But I mean, this is a terrifying warfare. The parak closes with a response of these elders. The response is Vayacharishu v'loy onu osay davar. They did not respond at all, because that's what Chizkiyahu responded. They came back to Chizkiyahu with torn clothes, and they told what Rav Shakai had said. They closed, Rashi says, because of mourning, because Hashem was cursed. A few things to focus on when looking at this perek as a whole is, number one is that this perek, actually the episode that this perek is describing appears three times in Tanakh. One is in Melachim Beis, perek Yud Ches onwards, and the other one is in Divrei Hayomim Beis, perek Lamed Beis. So this appears three times, and here in Yeshayahu, perek Lamed Vov. So if you look at them actually and you compare them a little bit, it is interesting that the events leading up to this are a little bit different. So for instance, in Sefer Melachim, what leads up to this event is that Sennacherib lays siege to all the villages of Yehuda in the south. And in that time, Chizkiyahu reaches out, sends out a message in peace to Sennacherib, offers to pay 300 talents of silver, a large, large amount of money. And when they're not able to pay that money, that's when Sennacherib sends Rav Shakai. That's the version we have in Sefer Melachim. But the version that we have in Sefer Divrei Hayamim is a little different, and that is that Sennacherib laid siege to the villages of Yehuda, but in this time Chizkiyahu started preparing for war. He blocked up the pools, the external water sources to the city, he fortified the walls, started making weapons, and so it sounds like a different prerequisite. The Malam says, to synthesize the two, it makes a lot of sense that both actually happened, meaning to say, what Chizkiyahu probably did first was send out messages of peace that would buy him more time to be able to create the fortifications, to be able to make it in this war against Sennacherib. So this is worthwhile thinking about in the holistic picture of Tanakh. Just a few things else for us to concentrate on this in this section over here. When he calls out, when Rav Shakai is calling out scathingly and tauntingly across the wall, offering them their vineyards and good land, what he actually means is, as Rashi explains, is that the foreign policy of Assyria has been to take and redistribute the people they exile, to create less of a nationalistic resurgence. They said, well, let's put them in different lands so they're not going to fight back. They're not going to have their land they're fighting for. So that's what he's saying is, I'll give you a life in suburbia. I'll give you a life where your greatest ideals will be pruning your lawn and your bushes, and that you'll have a wonderful, successful life, but it won't be an idealistic life. That's what he's offering them, which is, by the way, what many people would actually willingly want. And that's what he's talking to, the basic sort of convenience of a lifestyle, which would be beyond the scale of ideology. It is interesting that they are silent to this response. Why don't they respond? Why are they not engaging in the psychological warfare and trying to shout back so that the guards on the wall hear them and say that, no, we're going to survive and we're going to succeed and you're not going to beat us and we're going to... Why don't they say any of that? So it's interesting. Oftentimes the best response to public affronting is actually silence. A lot of times you wield more power in silence itself. And so many times we have this where you see, you know, Israel is accused of X, Y, and Z, and Israel and the country Israel has to keep quiet, is not able to respond because there's much more at stake than the silly tit for tat which is being held in the New York Times or whatever newspaper has decided to write its tilted or stilted op-ed to a twisting history. This seems to be a pattern we're going to see throughout Jewish history. Last question just to think about when looking at this perek, and that is who in the world is Rav Shakai? So this is a general. Before Sennacherib himself comes back, he sends this general of his Rav Shakai. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Samuch Amar Aleph tells us a fascinating thing. That actually he was a Yisrael Mumar, or Yisrael Meshumad. That means to say that he was a Jew who actually left Judaism and joined the Syrian ranks and was obviously very successful in their army, which was probably why he was chosen as a spokesperson, because he's the greatest thorn in their sides. Now, Barbanel adds to the drama by explaining the following. That's why, in fact, he was chosen, because, of course, he could speak Hebrew, so he could be a great communicator between the Syrian forces and the Hebrew forces. But more than that, actually, what happened was that when the elders responded to him, what they were really saying was the following. They were saying, you know, for your own honor, don't speak in Hebrew, because, you know, what's going to happen is the people in the wall are going to start saying to themselves, he's not really an Assyrian, he's really, really at heart, he's going to turn around, he's going to come back to Judaism, he's not going to be, he's not really on their side. So they were saying, for your kavod, for your honor, Rav Shaked, don't even speak. Show that you're an Assyrian and you're a proud Assyrian, and that's the way we share this conversation. Almost as if it's for his own good. But he understood that what their real intent was. They were scared of the power of the psychological statement if the people really would understand it, which is why he screams louder and why it is that he curses Hashem further in the second paragraph, in the second attack, more scathing attack when he responds, because he wants to demonstrate his lack of connection to the nation of Israel. And I think we see this a lot of times. A lot of times throughout history, where you have an individual who was a Jew or always is a Jew, but is a person who rejected their culture and their heritage, and they ultimately become the greatest fighters against Israel. They become the greatest enemies, the self-hating Jews in history and in society. And that's who Rav Shakeh is. We're going to see Chizkiyahu's response as we enter the next parak. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.